The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We will come back to housing now because we debated and discussed the issue a little bit earlier in the show. There are things happening on this front today. Cabinet apparently this week going to be discussing the possibility of looking at some sort of financial incentives to aid developers make building more viable, particularly the building of apartments and brownfield sites in urban areas, whether that takes the form of upfront incentives or tax breaks at the end, we do not know. But that's what we discussed earlier. Shay Lally is with me now, though, from Houses to Restore. A lot of people will follow Shay and Houses to Restore on Instagram and elsewhere. So, Shay, listen, thanks a million for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Kieran.
So, can we talk about dereliction, first of all? Because it's something that didn't really feature in the conversation earlier, the amount of vacant housing stock that is in the country.
Yeah.
We have no shortage of houses in one sense.
Yeah, I think there were statistics last week in the Irish Times and it said there's 12,500 units. And it's interesting, like, I can think back to 2007 or 2008 when I actually first got the idea for Houses to Restore, and it was prompted by the amount of empty houses that we had even then in, like, Fairview, Merino, Phibsborough. It's absolutely insane. I suppose the big challenge with it is, though, is that, like, it's a big undertaking to buy a house that has been derelict for a couple of years because there's just so many things with that house. There's so many issues that might crop up with that house that makes it challenging and makes it scary for people. And I think if you look at the price point of these houses, like in the past, if you bought a fixer upper, it would be at a certain price point, like kind of below market, but now they're right at the very top. And then you have to add in the cost of refurbishing them. And if you put the cost of buying them and refurbishing them together, in many cases, if you went to sell the house after that process, you'd be lucky to see a return, like as in get your money back between the purchase price and the rent. Renovation costs.
Yeah, because I, a lot of people like myself who maybe over the last 10 years were at that point in their lives were looking for houses, and maybe it was the war in Ukraine, maybe it was post-COVID inflation, but there came a time where it just became cost prohibitive almost to buy the house and do it up. It used to be the point people didn't do it because maybe the hardship wasn't worth it. It just financially became not worth it, didn't it, for a lot of people?
Financial is one thing, and then also just the lack of trades then at that point, particularly post-COVID and Ukraine with the materials, you know. So it was just really a triple whammy: shortage of houses, lack of trades, and then the materials going up. And as you say, it was just the perfect storm. And now we're just at a place, because we have so few houses, people are buying them. They're buying them at the higher price point. Like, I was bidding on one myself like a couple of weeks ago, and it went for €80,000 over the asking price, you know. And that house needed, I'd say, somewhere between 250 and 300,000 spent on it, you know. So, and then when you put that together, 300,000 plus the 675, if you went to sell it, would you get 975 for it? Probably not, you know.
Okay, so that's what puts people off. So what's the solution here then? If we accept that we want to get to a point where more of those houses are going to return to the market, they're going to become habitable, people are going to be living in them. How do we make it viable?
I think one thing is, like, the vacant homes grant is a good idea in theory, but I think it's a challenge. It suits people who have money, who can afford to pay all the bills and wait for the money to come through at the end. So I think that money needs to be drip fed to people. I think that is important. And I think there needs to be an education piece around that as well, because people are, I don't like to use the word clueless, but they essentially are, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense towards anyone, but they're sort of clueless as in the process of renovating a house and going about it. So I do feel that, you know, with the vacant homes grant and everything that falls underneath that, there is an onus for an educational piece as to how to go about renovating your house, you know, guidance, tips, expert insights, case studies of people who have done it, things to avoid, pitfalls, etc.
You know, the economies of scale argument often doesn't apply here, because people are doing this on a house by house basis. But I wonder, could you make it work? I mean, are there schemes, incentives, are there things that the government or policymakers could put in place that would encourage the kind of the development, as it were, of developers who focus on this area and this area alone?
Yeah, I think in certain locations, for definite, like if you look at, say, parts of Dublin 1, like Mountjoy Square, for example, I think that's an ideal, you know, example of what you're talking about, of maybe where there could be some form of incentive or something whereby it could be done at scale, because there's so many buildings there.
One building on Mountjoy Square, you know, again, economies of scale won't apply there, but if you're doing 20 of them.
Exactly, yeah. suddenly, and there's so many buildings around there and, you know, roads off it. And it's definitely one part of the city that's been massively neglected, unfortunately. And it's so close to the city centre. So that's one example that you could do it. And then, like, if you look at Cork and all the other urban centres and cities in Ireland, in the country, like, there's arguably a case for that then in other parts of the country as well, you know.
So, I mean, I can't remember, was it the 1980s or the 90s? I think it was the 90s, maybe, with the first lots initiative, the living over the shop, which is a version of this. It's kind of old buildings that are empty, or parts of them are empty.
Yeah.
And we want to get people living in them. And they've all kind of been failures, every one of them, to one degree or another.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it's the fire regs is one thing. Like, the fire regulations are quite onerous, you know. And that's something that's been covered in the past in the media. And then even planning, you're putting in for a change of use. There's just a litany of various different things that you have to jump through. So it's riskier. So for the average punter, there's just too much red tape for the average punter who's thinking of moving into one of these. And if you're a developer, there's arguably easier ways to make money if you're a developer, you know?
Yeah, I'm just thinking of this, the way you explain it. So if you're an individual and you're looking at it and with the purchase price and then the renovation costs, if the house is not going to be worth what you put into it, you're going to have a big nest egg there, or the bank's not going to give you the money. They're going to send out a valuer and say, sorry, we're not giving you a mortgage for 900 grand if the house is going to be worth 700 grand at the end of it. And then if you're a developer and you're looking at all those fire regulations, you're looking at kind of the unforeseen things that will always crop up when you're dealing with a derelict property. And then you're looking at a field on the edge of town and you think, I can build 80 semi-Ds in this field.
Yeah.
And it's an awful lot easier. It's how to kind of, it in light of those realities, how to solve the problem is where we are, isn't it?
Yeah, like, I have a friend of mine and he's a developer and he started out flipping one-off houses and he said it's easier to build 80 houses than it is to renovate one house and sell it.
Really?
Because you just put a process in place and it's just copy and paste and you do it once and you just keep going. Whereas every single house you do, you do it in that, and then you stop, and then you do it somewhere else, and then you stop again, you know? Whereas when you're doing the 80 houses in the field, it's just you put a system in place and you just press go and you go from A to B, and it's far easier than that.
Yeah, same kitchen, same bathroom, same everything is going into each house. Whereas again, even in the Mountjoy Square example, while there's a uniformity to all of those houses, there's not uniform problems in all of them.
Exactly. The condition of them is very different, even the roofs or the substructure or whatever. Exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, given the fact that we've had all of these lot schemes, the living over the shops, and they failed to one degree or another, I mean, do you feel there's sufficient focus from policymakers on this area? Or are they focused more on the brownfield and the greenfield developments? I think so.
I think they're more focused on the brown and the greenfield developments. To be fair, they're probably the easier wins, aren't they? In the sense that, you know, if you get a few greenfield sites going, you've thousands and thousands of units. Whereas with these, we're looking at pockets and we've 12,500 vacant units. You know, it's not that many in the grand scheme of things, even though it's a lot in other ways, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it boils down to just what I feel is there's just a lack of an action plan, like a broad action plan for housing where every sort of different option is taught through, you know.
Is there a way, and maybe this brings us back to the tax incentive argument we had a little bit earlier, that policymakers could look at enticing smaller developers into that scene, into the renovation scene?
Yeah. Well, like, if you look at someone like me, I'd love to go into development, but the cost of finance makes a lot of these things prohibitive, you know? And in some ways, it would be great to see if there was some sort of scheme for, say, you know, aspiring developers that they could get money at a very, very low rate, or maybe at 0% for their first one or two or three schemes if they seem to be bringing, you know, vacant properties back into the market, you know?
Yeah, maybe it's a thing they could look at. What do you make of the conversation that is being had today around, you know, some sort of incentives to property developers? Now, Pascal Donoghue said we're not going back to the old Section 23s. They were way too broad and they encouraged speculative building, kind of people building for the sake of a tax break rather than building to provide homes or units to sell. Yet, by all accounts, the government are considering something, whether it's upfront or kind of a back end. We don't know. There's an argument that you just stop tinkering with the market and you just let things settle down and see what happens. But with housing figures not having hit the kind of target last year, there maybe is a feeling something has to be done. What's your view?
I think it's planning needs to be looked at. The utilities need to look at the amount of trades that we have. We need an action plan to get more people into trades. We need to, you know, look at things like even like AI and stuff like that and the management of these construction sites and really revolutionise the industry to make it really like at its optimum as such. So as we are getting the most amount with what we have. And then the tax incentives, I just don't think we can do that in a widespread sense because there will just be carnage really. Like, whereas I think if it's done in pockets, like what we're saying, potentially the likes of a Mountjoy Square, that would make sense because if you consider that's in the condition that it's in and no one has really gone near that despite having the Celtic Tiger and everything else that we've had.
We have a text in here from somebody and it sounds like it's born of personal experience. The moment you develop anything on Mountjoy Square, the Georgian society will be all over you, making it unaffordable.
That's also true.
Nolan Fermoy says, I live over my shop on the main street in a large town, County Cork, and I have no neighbours. Which, like on a broader point, right, Noel is right and that's the issue. You have to encourage people and once enough people are in there, maybe it'll attract more. But the other thing that policymakers are going to have to do, and this always struck me as something that was absent from all of those living over the shop schemes, is that you have to have other amenities in town. Our towns have become kind of just centres for commerce. If you want people to live there, you need green spaces, you need benches, you need all of these types of things.
Yeah, I think though if you look at some places, they're becoming a bit better, aren't they? Even if you look at Dunleary as an example, that's a town sort of in Dublin, and they are, there's more public realms and there's bits being developed in these places. Mm. I think they're becoming a little bit more aware of that, but definitely slow, to be fair. And it's not widespread across the entire country either, to be fair. You know, those things are going into the suburbs, and even in some suburbs, I live in Portmarnock, and if you look at Portmarnock, they're building thousands and thousands of houses and they're not really putting any additional amenities in, you know. There's the odd playground, but that's about the extent of it. The schools are still the same size, there's no new shopping centres going in, you know. So you could argue that that's a case in some of the suburbs as well that are being developed, you know.
Yeah, well listen, Shay, interesting stuff. Thanks a million for coming in to us. Shay Lally from Houses to Restore. If you don't follow Shay already on Instagram and elsewhere, you'll find him there, Houses to Restore. Thank you very much again.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.